A young blonde girl peers out through the window of a horse-drawn carriage. Tears stream down her pale cheeks.
Imagine you're a child again. A child who has never been away from home before. Not for one single day. When I was 10 years old, my mother decided she could no longer afford to keep me. I was sent away from the little house in Portsmouth where I had been born, far away to live with my wealthy aunts Lady Bertram and Aunt Norris at Mansfield Park. I had already been taught to be good. Now I was told I must never forget to be grateful. But for a long time, I was only timid and unhappy.
We should no doubt prepare ourselves for an ignorant child with vulgar manners. These are not incurable faults.
I trust you will prove a well-disposed girl with more sense than our poor dear sister.
Our sister has enough sense to send her daughter to us.
Being with her cousins will be an education in itself.
I only hope she'll not tease poor Pug. I've but just got Julia to leave it alone.
A little pug dog is sitting on the lady's lap. Outside, a footman helps the little girl down from the carriage. The little curly blonde-haired girl, aged around 7 years old, stands on flagstones looking up at the ominous facade of a grand house which stands before her. A maid ushers the little girl into a room hung with tapestries where 4 children stand in a line. An officious-looking woman, Mrs. Norris, greets her.
Come, Fanny, and meet your cousins. This is Mariah, and if I were to teach you nothing, still you would learn to be good and clever from her. Julia, Tom, and Edmund.
How do you do?
The girls curtsy. Fanny curtsies back.
Come meet your uncle Sir Thomas and your aunt Lady Bertram.
Fanny curtsies before her elegant aunt and proud uncle.
Child must be tired after so long a journey. Sit here beside your aunt. Edmund, give your cousin a slice of gooseberry tart.
Edmund, of around 9, offers a plate. Fanny shakes her head and runs off.
This is not a very promising beginning.
Lady Bertram glances anxiously at a weary Sir Thomas. Mansfield Park. Fanny runs across an expansive lawn and thwacks a shuttlecock.
I miss my noisy, merry brothers and sisters and the rough and tumble of my own home. No one meant to be unkind, but I was the poor relation, and I was often made to feel it. Only Edmund put himself out to secure my happiness. He became my one true friend.
Edmund hits the feathered shuttlecock to Fanny as a little girl. She picks it up as a young woman.
And as the years pass, I came to love him as more than a cousin.
Fanny has honey-coloured blonde hair and a broad, warm smile. She and Edmund continue playing badminton on the grass. A river glistens behind them.
Edmund! Fanny!
Tom beckons them. Inside, Julia and Mariah, now pretty young women, are playing piano. Mrs. Norris and a chap called Rushworth listen.
Excuse me, Aunt Norris. Sir Thomas wishes to see us.
I'm not at all happy at having to leave Mansfield for so long, but it cannot be avoided. Our affairs in the West Indies do not prosper. I expect you to behave with proper decorum while I'm away. Of you, Mariah, I ask only that your marriage to Mr. Rushworth should not take place before my return.
Then your return cannot be too soon for me, Sir Thomas.
Julia, I give you over to your Aunt Norris, Edmund. I believe I may trust you to your own judgment.
Yes, sir.
Tom, here is the chance to prove yourself.
I hope so, sir.
Ah, Fanny, there was something I meant to say to you. Should your brother's ship be in England, I hope you will invite him to Mansfield.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I had hoped William would find his sister at 18 much changed from his sister at 10. But I fear he will not.
Sir Thomas eyes Fanny critically, then leaves the room. Fanny blinks anxiously and looks slightly put out. As the door closes, Mariah and Julia burst out laughing.
With Sir Thomas's departure, it was as if a cloud had been lifted from Mansfield Park. Even for me, there was a spirit of newfound freedom. I was 18, it was summer, and I had never been happier.
I thought Aunt Norris was never going to let me out.
How did you get away?
I told her I had a very tedious errand to run for my cousin.
Fanny and Edmund go horseback riding.
I forgot. Pick this for you.
A pretty white flower.
If Rushworth didn't have 12,000 a year, what a very stupid fellow he'd be.
Luckily for him, he has.
I've had a letter from my brother Tom. He's staying on in town. Just what my father was afraid of. Tom's whole life has turned into one long party. I'm left to deal with everything.
Oh, I think it suits you very well. Besides, it's not all work. And I know this doesn't count, but I was never happier.
I'll race you.
Come on!
In my innocence, I imagined I would be happy always. Then with the sudden brilliance of lightning, fresh from the pleasures of London's fashionable society, Mary Crawford and her brother Henry arrived in our lives. Life at Mansfield Park would never be the same again.
What fine neighbours we have.
This is where we shall begin, with the Bertrams. A county with such a house in it cannot be all deadly dull.
That will depend on the deadliness of its occupants.
There are four children.
Oh, no children, please.
All now grown up and highly eligible. There is a younger son, but for myself, I have chosen the elder.
The heir? You always do.
Even I couldn't think myself thrown away on the eldest son of a baronet.
So, dearest Minx, what is your strategy?
Tut-tut. No strategy, only the use of our natural powers.
Now they are doomed.
And you, Henry? You shall marry the younger Miss Bertram, the beautiful and eligible Julia.
We've been in a bad school for matrimony.
That I will allow. Marriage, as we've seen it, is all deceit and disappointment.
Oh, then there's at least one advantage to bad schooling. Are we not more likely to deceive than to be disappointed?
Mrs. Norris watches from a window as handsome siblings Mary and Henry Crawford approach a grand pillared entrance.
Here they are. One can always rely on fashionable people to be half an hour late.
Well, they don't have far to come.
I can't imagine a country cottage will amuse them for long.
Indeed. Their mother, dear creature, could not endure it above a week. They were pretty as children. How do they look now?
Well, Miss Crawford may have the London style, but her prettiness does our girls no disservice. She's altogether too small and too brown. And her brother, my dear, his income may be satisfactory, but he's plain, very plain.
On the subject of Mr. Crawford's plainness, you must allow Julia to be the judge.
Later in the tapestry room.
I'm sorry that the rest of my family are not here to greet you, Miss Crawford.
Your eldest son is not with you, Lady Bertram?
Since his father has been gone, Tom prefers London or Newmarket to Mansfield.
I do feel for you, Lady Bertram.
Has Sir Thomas encountered difficulties in Antigua?
It is, I believe, extremely hot.
Circumstances in the West Indies are much less favourable than before, Mr. Crawford.
I did not at all like to have Sir Thomas leave me, but I have been astonished at how well Edmund supplies his place in carving, in settling with the servants. I take his advice in everything.
Well, then perhaps Mr. Bertram may advise me.
Fanny eyes Mary cagily.
How might I advise you, Miss Crawford?
I'm assured that my harp has arrived safe in Northampton. But do you think I can hire a cart to convey it here? No, I cannot.
You would find it difficult, Miss Crawford, to hire a horse and cart just now, in the middle of harvest.
I expect I should understand you in time. But coming from London, where everything can be got with money, I'm quite put out by your country ways.
You could not be expected to have thought of it before, Miss Crawford, but once you do, you must see the importance of getting in the grass.
Julia notices Henry eyeing Mariah.
Anyone for more lemonade?
Our one disadvantage, Miss Crawford, is that Mariah's wedding has to wait until after Christmas for our father's return. January is a very disagreeable month in which to marry.
It is surely the most difficult month in which to make such a long sea voyage. Though I have taken certain measures to spare Lady Bertram the worst, by ensuring that I am the first person to be acquainted with any fatal catastrophe.
Well, my stepfather, the Admiral, ma'am, once made a winter crossing in such mild weather that the voyage took a whole month longer than expected. In Sir Thomas's case, We will hope for a happy compromise between speed and safety.
How very well you put it, Mr. Crawford.
Indeed. And if it is Sir Thomas's fate never to return, it will be particularly consoling to see our darling Mariah settled in such a great match.
Mariah looks up at her fiancé, Rushworth, a plain, stocky chap. He bows. She then returns her flirtatious gaze to Henry. Later in the garden...
Mariah is without her parasol. Fanny.
Mariah catches a headache. We shall all suffer.
Lady Bertram hands her parasol to Fanny, who runs to the others, who gaze out over the park.
This is perfect. I'm tempted to call it too perfect. If this were mine, I would introduce an element of the unexpected, of romance. A ruined castle, perhaps.
We have no castle to ruin, sir.
That is only pretense, Miss Julia. One builds and ruins at the same time.
Henry takes the parasol off Fanny and opens it.
Allow me.
Allow me.
Rushworth takes the parasol off Henry and holds it over Mariah. Julia stumbles as she walks with Henry.
Oh, my ankle.
Here.
Thank you.
Henry offers an arm. She takes it with a smile. Mary walks with Edmund.
If Mansfield were mine, I should add a folly.
Now that I look at it objectively, Miss Crawford, I like what I see too much to want to change it.
Come, Edmund. You must surely fancy a little chapel.
Why in heaven would Mr. Bertram want a chapel? Does he enjoy forcing ladies out of their bed early in order to kneel on a stone floor? Especially unpleasant if the poor chaplain isn't worth looking at.
I am shortly to be ordained as a clergyman, Miss Crawford.
Well, then you must forgive my pleasantries, Mr. Bertram. I did not know.
Fanny watches as Edmund walks on with Mary. Lady Bertram and Mrs. Norris sit under a gazebo.
Miss Crawford has been telling me why they're here. My dear, they're not here for the view. The fact is, she cannot possibly go back to the London house with her stepfather. A week ago, the Admiral installed his mistress under his own family roof.
Well, I'm not at all surprised. Well, I have the highest regard for the Navy, but, well, one has only to think of Lord Nelson.
Fanny joins her aunts as they continue to watch the chatting couples in the soft amber evening light.
I rather think Julia's ready to be fallen in love with.
Fanny watches the couples chatting on the lawn, her face filled with an innocent curiosity. Henry shares a look with Mariah before walking on with Julia. The other couples follow. Fanny notices Edmund hesitate a moment and gaze fixedly at Mary. He watches as she views the beautiful landscape, her hair scraped up under a wide hat, exposing a long, elegant neck. The Crawfords leave the house along a gravel path towards their cottage.
I like your Miss Bertrams exceedingly.
They give themselves no airs.
No. Their vanity is in such good order they seem quite free of it.
Last year's style, of course. They're not hurt by what they don't know. And you like Julia best?
Ah, yes. You know, when we arrived, I mistook little Miss Price for a servant and gave her my hat.
Do you really like Julia best? Mariah is generally thought the handsomer.
So I should suppose.
Poor Julia couldn't choose her nose. If she could, I doubt her taste would improve on it. But she is charming. The sisters are different, but equally charming.
They are.
And charmed. I think you might have popped them both under your arm and run off with them.
Both?
Either.
Mary gives her brother a knowing look and walks on, swinging the tip of her red parasol onto the gravel. Henry follows. Edmund joins Fanny on the lawn as she sketches a drawing of a garden statue on some paper. He looks at it.
Fanny, what's your opinion of Miss Crawford?
Fanny looks at him with eyes narrowed. They walk together.
She has every virtue, a fortune, and a pretty face.
She does. And?
I've got a stone in my shoe. Ooh.
She rests a hand on his arm and tips the stone out.
But, Edmund, does she truly hate to pray?
Does she really believe everything can be got with money?
I think Miss Crawford talks to amuse rather than anything else.
They walk onwards down some steps.
Aunt Fanny, are you riding tomorrow?
Yeah.
Then I'll have the mare saddled up half an hour early. Miss Crawford wants to learn, and Jenny is much our quietest horse. You won't be inconvenienced. They'll make sure we're no more than half an hour.
As Edmund walks off, Fanny purses her lips slightly and looks out over the grand park. Her face darkens. Fanny paces anxiously across the entrance of the cobbled stable yard. She looks out and shakes her riding crop in her hand. Mary, wearing a plumed hat and mounted on the small mare, rides with Edmund holding the rein.
So you are to be a clergyman?
I am, yes.
I'm surprised. Come, do change your mind. You really are fit for something better. It's not too late. You could go into the law.
Go into the law? With as much ease as I might go for a ride.
Well, usually there's an uncle or a grandfather to leave a fortune to the second son.
An admirable practice, but I'm an exception and must shift for myself. Besides, even with a fortune, I would make the same choice.
But men like to distinguish themselves, don't they? You might be a soldier or a sailor.
I might, but I am not.
They arrive back at the stable yard.
You're a natural rider, Miss Crawford.
Well, I am a very good teacher.
Fanny steps up to them.
Fanny, we're late. I'm so sorry.
Really, it's of no importance. Oh, I'm sure it is. I do apologise. Your cousin and I had so much to talk about, we quite forgot you. But selfishness must always be forgiven, you know, because there's never any hope of a cure.
Fanny glares as Mary dismounts and fixes her skirts. Tom gallops on a white horse through the grounds. Later inside...
It was only a little play, lover's vows. We were just putting it on for a few friends.
We were well into rehearsals and we'd all have gone off brilliantly when the Dowager Duchess died and our entire scheme was destroyed.
Good gracious.
I mean, it's not worth complaining about, of course. Still, the poor old lady could not have chosen a worse time. If only the news could have been suppressed for the 3 days we needed. She was a grandmother after all, and she did die 100 miles off.
I'm sure you're very much to be pitied, my dear.
But all is well, ma'am, for now Mr. Bertram is to take the Baron, and I am to be Count Cassel, ma'am, and come in 3 times, and have 42 speeches, which is no trifle.
Ah, Miss Crawford. Delighted.
Mr. Bertram.
Tom kisses her hand and eyes her intently.
What do you say, Edmund?
Small, dark, and bright. We have our Amelia.
I'm engaged and dismissed in one breath.
It's been a great while since I trod the boards. Today I feel as if I could be anything and everything.
I am of some use, I hope, in preventing any unnecessary expense. Come, Fanny. It is a shocking trick for a young person to always be lolling upon a sofa. You really must learn to think of other people.
Fanny gets up respectfully.
I'll never have these curtains finished in time for the performance.
Edmund storms out.
You're not seriously putting on the play here?
Well, certainly we are. Why not? Look, it's a slight piece, I know, but...
A sword.
Do you think this is too modern? Where's Mr. Crawford? I want his opinion.
For one thing, we know Father's on the return journey now and in constant danger. For another, yes.
And if we can keep my mother's spirits up, I shall think our time well spent.
Tom looks at his mother sleeping on the sofa.
It's a very anxious time for her.
What is it?
What? I was not asleep.
For another, you have asked Maria to play the mother of an illegitimate child.
Oh, do not act in anything improper, my dear. Sir Thomas would not like it.
You know Father wouldn't like his grown-up daughters to be acting.
I know my father as well as you do. I'd imagine no one in this house can see or judge but you.
Perhaps Edmund doesn't realize how much I'm relying on him. You see, I'm to be Amelia, but there's no one for Anhalt, my tutor. If anyone should play it, it's you. He is a clergyman, you know.
Then I'd be sorry to make him ridiculous with bad acting.
We can manage perfectly well without you. There's no need for you to take part.
I have no intention of taking part.
Only don't expect to govern everyone else.
No doubt you will decide in time. When you do, pray let me know which of you gentlemen I have the pleasure of making love to.
Mary sashays out. Fanny, dismayed, looks over at Edmund. Night at Mansfield Park.
You have willfully ignored my request.
No, I have leave of absence.
I want you to raise this curtain by an inch. Come down here. Come down here. Such insolence.
Preparations are being made for a dress rehearsal. Fanny is pinning up Julia's costume.
Do you mind not taking part, Fanny?
No. Besides, your father would not approve, and I can't afford to displease him. Do stand still, Julia.
Rushworth sweeps in.
Do I not look every inch the tyrannical father?
He spins, showing off his cloak, white-painted face and wig.
Fanny, I want your opinion.
Yes. Edmund!
Fanny places a reassuring hand on Julia before heading out of the room with Edmund.
This acting scheme gets worse and worse. They're going to ask an outsider, a complete stranger, to play Anhalt.
And what can you do? Tom's so determined.
There's only one thing. I must play Anhalt myself.
Fanny stares at him, then lowers her head.
Well, can you think of an alternative?
You said nothing would induce you.
I know. Do you imagine I like being driven to be so inconsistent? It can't be right to let Tom go trawling the countryside for anyone who can be persuaded to take part, no matter who.
No, it can't.
Then give me your blessing, Fanny. If you're not with me, I mistrust my own judgment.
I do see it's not right for Miss Crawford to act with a stranger.
Right, you're right. She must be spared. Dear Fanny, I couldn't be easy until I'd spoken to you.
He smiles and gives her a brief, friendly hug before heading back inside. Vexed, Fanny follows him in. Mariah comes downstairs and dumps some costumes in a box. She looks around the room, then turns to Henry, who holds out a hand for her. He helps her onto the stage, and the pair hide themselves behind the red curtains that Mrs. Norris has hung. They face each other in the candlelight, Mariah's breasts heaving in her tight-fitting empire-line dress.
Are we not made for one another? Tonight I can be only one thing, Mariah. Tonight I am your lover, or I am nothing.
She closes her eyes and waits. Henry eyes her pretty face, smiles, then kisses her. They continue kissing. Mrs. Norris brushes the red velvet curtain with a sweep of her hand.
Do you think it's too short?
Julia's ankles are exposed.
Let me ask Henry.
Why blush, dear girl? Pray tell me why. You need not, I can prove it. For though your garter met my eye, my thoughts were far above it.
I say steady on there, Rushworth.
The curtain falls, exposing Mariah and Henry.
He's still acting, isn't he?
You cannot refuse me. I must at long last hold you to my heart.
Now you've made me mistake my lines, Mr. Crawford.
Well, then we must rehearse again until you choose to remember them.
Get Mariah in shape, will you, Henry? Otherwise we'll never be ready.
My pleasure, sir.
Julia covers her mouth and runs out in tears.
Now what have you done, Fanny? If all you can do is make mischief, we're better off without you.
Fanny passes Rushworth on her way out.
To see such a short, mean-looking little man set up for a fine actor is ridiculous.
Here. Would you like me to hear you, Mr. Rushworth?
Oh, yes, if you'd be so kind.
Fanny and Rushworth sit in front of a blazing open fire. Fanny looks at the script as Rushworth begins a speech.
What does the Baron accuse me of? Nothing he himself is not guilty of. But I shall make short work.
No, light.
Oh!
He throws his hands up, exasperated. Edmund walks over to Mary.
We can't put off any longer, Miss Crawford. And really, you haven't so very much to fear. It is only me.
Perhaps we could find a private corner.
Fanny glues her eyes on Edmund and Mary as they walk out arm in arm.
You see how it is, Miss Price. I cannot for the life of me remember it.
You have the first line perfectly, Mr. Rushworth.
But, Miss Price, I have 240 of them. When Julia speaks, I cannot recognize my cue. Miss Price?
Fanny watches the couple from the doorway.
I do not wish to blame you, yet I can hardly call it ladylike of you to visit me here alone at night.
My dear Mr. Anhalt, allow me to speak my heart, to tell you that I love you, that I've loved you since first I set eyes on you.
Edmund and Mary lock stares.
The stage directions say, Amelia takes Anhalt by the hand and looks into his face.
He holds out his hand and she takes it, then steps in closer towards him. They seem about to kiss.
Ah, Fanny. Excellent. Julia won't do it. Come on. This is your big moment. You are to be the cottager's wife.
Me? No. I cannot play a part.
Yes, yes, you can do it well enough for us.
You mustn't let us down, Fanny. When do we ever ask anything of you?
You cannot be so ungrateful as to not do your cousin's wish.
Yes, do help us out, Fanny.
Fanny shifts nervously. A carriage barrels along an isolated country road.
You'll soon get the hang of it, Miss Price.
Henry holds out a hand and helps Fanny onto the stage.
Now, we'll try the moment when you interrupt my scene with Agatha. You'll find us very well rehearsed. We've been hard at it, practicing by ourselves.
Fanny sighs deeply. The horse-drawn carriage travels onwards, a pale moonlight illuminating the driver and footman on top. The dress rehearsal is in full swing.
You imagine, sir, I can be shamed into a confession. Yours is a vain conceit. Your accusations are enough to make my blood boil.
Sir Thomas enters.
Father.
He stares at them all on the stage. Even Mrs. Norris seems shaken by the dramatic entrance of her grim-faced brother-in-law. She averts her eyes as he steps into the room. Maria, standing close to Henry, stares at him, while Fanny hangs her head. He grabs a script out of Rushworth's hand, and moving away from the stage opens it. He turns to face them. Keeping his eyes peeled on them, Sir Thomas throws the script into the fire and walks out. Later in the dining room...
When you arrived, sir, we were going through the first three acts. Not unsuccessfully upon the whole.
Maria to Tom.
How dare Henry go like that, laughing, and not a word to me?
My dear girl, a man like Henry isn't so easily roped.
Don't suppose I was the one doing the chasing.
Sir Thomas eyes the pair with contempt.
We had hoped, sir, to beg your indulgence. As inexperienced players.
My indulgence shall be given, Tom, but without the play acting.
Sir Thomas frowns and sighs.
Do you find Mr. and Miss Crawford agreeable acquaintances?
Indeed. Mr. Crawford is very pleasant, and Miss Crawford is a lively, pretty girl.
Everyone looks at Rushworth, who smiles awkwardly.
I do not say he's not a gentleman, considering. But, as your father cannot fail to have noticed, he's too short to be considered a well-looking man.
But Father, you've not told us the outcome of your stay in Antigua.
I'm happy to say our affairs in Antigua do now prosper.
Fanny turns to her uncle.
I hope you won't mind my asking, sir. But now that you have lived amongst it, do you believe slavery can continue in the same way?
Everyone's shocked.
Our little cousin is a friend to abolition.
Fanny throws Tom a look, then eyes Sir Thomas.
I think, my dear, we may very well do without slavery. But without order, we are lost.
Maria politely wipes her mouth with a napkin and stands.
You must excuse me. I am unwell.
Daytime, Sir Thomas strolls with Maria in the grounds.
Since I've been home, it has occurred to me that
Mr. Rushworth was perhaps accepted on too short an acquaintance. I'm unaware what an advantageous alliance it would be for you and for the family. But you must not sacrifice your happiness to it. Marriage is a serious undertaking. You have no particular reason to repent your engagement. Over dinner, I wondered if perhaps some new acquaintance had made you regret it.
Not at all.
If it is your wish, I may still like to release you. It's not too late. You must be perfectly open and sincere with me.
I thank you, sir, for your most generous attention. But I assure you, you are mistaken. I have the highest regard for Mr. Rushworth's character and disposition. I'm honored by his status and his fortune. What more could I wish for?
He looks unconvinced, but nods. As he walks away, Mariah's smile fades. Rushworth stands beaming at the bottom of the stairs. Mariah descends wearing a beautiful silk dress, coat and plumed hat.
Oh, how wonderful.
He kisses her hand and they enter a room filled with guests. Mrs. Norris stands with Mary.
It is my greatest glory, Miss Crawford, to take a little of the credit for bringing the admiration of Mr. Rushworth for our dearest angel Mariah into effect.
She strides out to the courtyard and up to the happy couple.
Mariah! You must write to me every day from London and tell me all about it.
Congratulations, Mr. Rushworth.
Goodbye.
Henry watches through a window as Mariah climbs on board an elegant coach festooned with white flowers. She looks at Henry. He raises his glass to her. She sits beside her new husband and they wave as they are driven off. Julia and a maid climb on board another coach waiting behind. Henry gulps back his wine.
Look after your sister, Julia.
Oh, weddings are such a bore. Thank God the racing season started so I can escape.
Tom stands with Edmund.
Even Father wouldn't insist I'm here through Cheltenham.
I need another drink.
Tom walks off and Edmund heads inside. He walks past Mary, who stands wistfully in the doorway.
You sighed, Miss Crawford.
Waving goodbye to your sister has made me wonder what there is to keep me at Mansfield.
Will you not stay for my sake?
I confess, I can imagine it being pleasant enough to spend half the year at Mansfield. But in a country cottage? No.
Might you not feel differently in time?
You think I should be the one to change? I doubt it, Mr. Bertram. I'm stubborn, you know. And I always get my way in the end.
Henry comes upon Fanny playing chase with a little girl.
Miss Price, I am come to visit the scene of the crime.
The little girl hides under a desk.
I shall always look back on our theatricals with such pleasure. We were alive. I was never happier.
Henry stands in Fanny's way as she heads out.
Don't you think we're unlucky, Miss Price? Don't you think fate might have indulged us with another week?
No, I don't. I think everyone indulged themselves enough.
He watches Fanny chase the little girl down a hallway. He has a mischievous glint in his eye as Fanny picks up the little girl and swings her around playfully. Later, Mary and Henry walk towards their cottage.
Well, that was a very proper wedding. The bride was beautiful, the bridesmaids suitably inferior.
She sits on steps and, distracted, removes her hat.
Mary? Well, how is young Bertram? I scarcely spoke a word to him all day.
Edmund is, as ever Edmund was, determined on obscurity. He will not change his mind. He's soon to be ordained. His living will be 700 a year.
Well, I'm glad he'll be so well off. A very pretty income to make ducks and drakes with.
You would look rather blank, Henry, if you were limited to 700 a year.
Perhaps, but all that is comparative.
Exactly.
She gets up and walks. He follows.
And then, Until we came here, I never imagined a country cottage could have so much the air of a gentleman's residence. In fact, I've made up my mind to stay longer.
Henry, what are you up to?
I fancy having Miss Price fall in love with me.
Fanny? Oh, what nonsense.
Haven't you noticed the wonderful improvement in her looks?
Look, the truth is there's no one else for you to notice, and you have to have someone. Well, perhaps a little bit of love might do her good. She's very sweet, and I will not have you make her unhappy. Really, I couldn't bear it if you were to turn out like our stepfather.
All I'm asking is to make a small hole in Fanny Price's heart.
Edmund watches Mary intently as she plays the harp for him in the tapestry room. She looks up at him and smiles. He stares at her, transfixed. Henry walks with Fanny in the gardens. Her face is animated and happy as he chats with her. Daytime, Fanny in a pretty green dress bounces down the stairs and out to the front of the house.
William!
Fanny! My dear sister!
They run into each other's arms and spin round. William, in navy uniform, takes a step back to look at her. Later, near the river, William, a handsome man in his 20s, gives Fanny a gold cross.
I chose it for you in Sicily.
Thank you. Oh, William, you can't imagine how much I've missed you.
Have you? But you are happy in Mansfield, aren't you, Fanny? They are kind to you.
Yes, they are kind. And of course, I love them all as I should. But my only real friend is Edmund.
Edmund, yes. In your letters you spoke so often of Edmund, I was quite jealous. I thought he'd taken my place.
No one could ever do that. Besides, what I feel for Edmund is... it's different. He isn't my brother.
Later, William recounts tales at the dining table.
Just off Trieste, we chased the enemy sail until we were close enough to fire on her, at which she returned our salute with a broadside that came scouring along the decks, tore through the foresail, made a large dent in a brass gun, rebounded away into the open sea.
Good heavens!
Amazing!
Luckily, we were all on the contrary side, or it would have killed and wounded a good many.
Dear me, how very disagreeable. I wonder anyone can ever go to sea.
I couldn't feel more differently. When listening to Mr. Price, I envy him every danger. To have gone through such hardships. And the glory of such heroism puts me to shame.
There is nothing heroic about what I do, Mr. Crawford. I'm just an ordinary midshipman.
It's still a remarkable thing to have given such proof of character, so young.
I do wish to distinguish myself, sir. But the truth is, I have no commission as yet. Sometimes I think I'll never be made lieutenant.
Henry gulps back wine. Sir Thomas looks up from his newspaper as Fanny and William enter a drawing room.
Ah, William.
Good morning, sir.
How are you enjoying your stay at Mansfield Park, young man?
Very much indeed, sir. But I only have 2 days left, and tomorrow is Fanny's birthday.
Of course. Well, then we must celebrate. I have not seen Fanny dance since she was a little girl. What say we throw our niece a ball before her brother goes back to sea? It's high time she came out.
Surely not.
Must I?
Well, indeed you must. It's your birthday.
Then may I not have my own way?
No, my dear, you may not. Because it is your day, it is your duty to consider everyone else. We need only make a small party.
But may I not choose the occasion? I should like it to be the same as the last birthday I had with William. A picnic?
A picnic? I see nothing against that.
Thank you, Sir Thomas.
Fanny and Mrs. Norris are in the kitchen.
A picnic indeed. A picnic for half the county. The nonsense and folly of people stepping out of their rank.
They prepare picnic things.
Now that you're to move into company, Fanny, you must never forget. Whatever the occasion, you must always be the lowest and the last.
Oh, I shall never forget that. Unless, of course, I'm enjoying myself too much to remember.
Fanny smiles and walks off, Mrs. Norris's eyes narrow. Night, Edmund places a gold chain into Fanny's hand.
Thought it might look well with William's cross.
This is beautiful. How can I ever thank you?
Oh, by accepting it for what it is, a token of love from one of your oldest friends.
What can I do? Miss Crawford has also sent me a necklace.
Miss Crawford has given you a necklace? Then, my dear Fanny, you must wear it.
Well, I don't want to. And anyway, yours is far more suited to my cross.
Edmund walks towards Fanny's bed and sits on it. He stares dreamily down at the chain Mary has given to Fanny.
How extraordinary that she and I should have had the same thought. She shows her affection for you, whereas to me, she seems determined to torment me. I'm sure she doesn't mean half the things she says, but you know the kind of life Mary wants. Hectic. Fashionable life in London. Could I ever live as she wants?
Well, what about the life you want to live? Haven't you always said that being a clergyman isn't about having a comfortable parish or even preaching a good sermon? It's about living a good life.
Yes. And so it is. But enough of my problems. Tomorrow is your day.
Then you must indulge me, Edmund, and see it first as I prefer.
She holds out his chain and he takes it off her. She turns and scrapes her long golden locks to one side. Edmund places the gold cross and chain over her head and fastens it. Candlelight illuminates Fanny's soft features.
There.
She stands and turns to him expectantly.
It could not look better.
She beams a toothy grin. He touches her arm and walks out, leaving Fanny slightly disappointed. People are gathered on the lawn for Fanny's picnic.
One, two, three, off you go!
Edmund has a scarf tied over his eyes as the group play Blind Man's Bluff. He reaches his arms out to catch someone. Sir Thomas stands smiling, but Mrs. Norris watches on disapprovingly from a bench as Edmund catches Fanny.
It's Mary, Miss Crawford.
You are mistaken, Mr. Bertram.
He rubs his hands up her arms.
I cannot guess it.
Fanny flushes slightly as Edmund caresses her shoulders and neck. He touches the gold chain and feels the cross.
It's Fanny.
Edmund removes the blindfold and she smiles toothily. Henry approaches.
Well, I should have known you, Miss Price. May I?
Henry now ties the white scarf around Fanny's eyes and spins her around.
One, two, three.
She reaches out at some girls, but they back off, giggling. She heads straight for Henry, who seems to want to be caught. He looks away peeved as she catches another young man.
James! Buster James!
Later, a fiddler plays as William dances a hornpipe. He crosses his arms in front and kicks out his feet, one after the other. He does a climbing a rope movement and finishes with a salute. Mary stands beside Fanny.
My dear Fanny, with your cousins gone, you're quite the centre of attention.
I think I prefer being overlooked.
Oh no, you must learn to enjoy it.
It serves no purpose to blush unseen. Not that you do. Did you know that Henry's taking William to London tomorrow? No, he is. They're going to dine with our stepfather, the Admiral. I've never seen my brother take so much trouble over anyone before.
Ruffled, brown-haired Henry makes his way over to Fanny. He bows graciously.
Miss Price, might I engage you for this dance? I've asked the musician to give us Portsmouth.
Sir Thomas wanders over.
It's your place to open the dancing, my dear.
Please, sir, must I?
It's your day, Fanny.
She goes with Henry reluctantly.
Take your places
for a dance. What a pity this is the last time I shall dance with you, Mr. Bertram.
Why is that?
Because the next time we meet, you shall be a clergyman.
Yes, I go to York tomorrow.
I've never yet danced with a clergyman, and I never will.
You are especially playful this afternoon, Miss Crawford.
You think if you shake me hard enough, something serious will drop out. But I assure you, I'm profoundly shallow. A large income is the best recipe I ever heard of for happiness.
Then your happiness is forever beyond my power.
Mary looks vexed as Edmund walks off. Couples stand in two lines facing each other.
Come, Mr. Bertram. It's not too late. Do change your mind. For me.
Mary dances around Edmund. Henry and Fanny jig around each other. Now Fanny, still slightly embarrassed, dances around Edmund and Mary. They do a chain-link movement, passing from one person to the next. Mrs. Norris and Lady Bertram look on. Fanny notices the cool stares between Edmund and Mary. Her mood changes and she seems more confident. Sir Thomas notices, as does William, who smiles. Henry sees how Fanny has blossomed under his attention. As the dance finishes, Fanny bows and claps. Edmund finds Fanny outside in the dark.
Here you are.
My uncle has advised me to go to bed.
I'm sure you've never been up so late in your life.
He sits down beside her on the steps.
I am worn out with civility. Talking all evening with nothing to say.
She looks up at the sky.
Look, Edmund. How lovely it is.
He looks at her, staring upwards.
How lovely you are tonight, Fanny. You've always disliked praise the way other women dislike neglect. But tonight I think you don't mind being told you've grown up into a pretty woman.
She smiles.
It must be Henry's doing. I don't think I didn't notice how much you enjoyed dancing with him.
Yes, I've been obliged to enjoy myself quite shockingly.
Edmund tilts his head back and looks at the sky. Now Fanny watches him.
There's Arcturus, looking very bright.
It's been a great while since we did any stargazing.
I don't know how it's happened, but yes, it is a very great while. I will be back soon.
Leaning back with her hands spread on the stone slabs, Fanny lets her thumb gently touch his thumb. She looks up expectantly, but he pulls his hand away. Morning time at Mansfield Park.
At last, a letter from Mrs. Rushworth. From Maria, our darling.
Maria, my dear.
Lady Bertram hands the letter to Fanny. She opens it and reads it for her and Mrs. Norris.
My dearest Mama, last night, I gave my first party. It was a sensation. I cannot tell you, Mama, how very tippy it is to be queen of the fashionable world. I have everything my heart desires, and my comfort as a wife is complete. Mr. Rushworth is presently in Bath visiting his mother, and
Fanny approaches Lady Bertram.
Here is something I can't quite read.
Mr. Rushworth is in Bath. Maria is alone in London, Edmund is ordained, and
Tom's absence I'm resigned to, but I wish they would not all leave us. I'm glad we took Fanny in as we did. Now the others are away, we feel the good of it, and it is such a comfort to know we shall always have her.
A butler enters.
Excuse me, miss, but Sir Thomas would like to see you.
Surely Sir Thomas has asked to see me, not Fanny.
No, madam. Sir Thomas asked for Miss Price.
Fanny walks out into the hallway and finds Sir Thomas waiting with hand on hip. She curtsies respectfully and walks into the well-appointed study. Henry is there waiting. Sir Thomas closes the door, leaving them on their own. Fanny curtsies and Henry bows.
He is made. I have the infinite satisfaction of congratulating you on your brother's promotion. Your brother is a lieutenant.
Henry takes a bundle of letters from a desk.
Here are the letters that confirm it. Would you like to see them?
Yes.
She sits on the sofa and excitedly opens the letters.
And has all this been your doing? Good heavens. Was it at your request? I am astonished.
Well, I went to London so as to introduce your brother to my stepfather.
Yes, that was very kind of you.
I wanted the Admiral to exert whatever influence he might have for getting him on. That was my purpose, my chief purpose. Although I confess that...
Crouched on one knee, Henry takes her hand in his.
Miss Price.
You are so generous. We are infinitely obliged to you, Mr. Crawford. I must go to my aunt immediately.
Please. Please.
She gets up to go, but stops and turns round. He takes her hand again.
Please.
The pair sit on the sofa. Henry stares at her through pale blue eyes.
You must allow me to say what I feel, Miss Price. Feelings that... you cannot have been completely unaware of.
I beg you, Mr. Crawford, pray don't.
At first, I saw only your sweetness, your grace, your beauty.
No, this story. Really, I cannot bear it.
Because you think I'm only playing.
Fanny grows embarrassed when Henry kisses her hand.
I love you with all my heart. I shall never, never cease loving you. I give you myself. My hand, my fortune. Are we not made for one another? Tell me. You must tell me you feel something for me in return.
He goes to kiss her hand again, but she pulls it away.
No, no. I can't believe a word you say. I've seen you do all this before.
She walks out. Fanny paces anxiously back and forth in her attic bedroom. She walks over to a window and peers down at the gardens below. Sir Thomas carries a cane as he walks upstairs and along a corridor. He approaches Fanny's bedroom door and knocks with the top of the cane, which is a sculpted man's head made of ebony.
Am I to understand that you mean to refuse, Mr. Crawford?
Yes, sir.
What is your reason?
I cannot like him well enough to marry him.
Here is a man with everything to recommend him. I'm half inclined to think, Fanny, that you do not know your own feelings.
No, but I do, sir. As soon as I was aware of them, I disliked Mr. Crawford's attentions.
Did you indeed? You're so young, you've scarcely met anyone. It's surely not possible that your affections have already...
She lowers her gaze, tears well in her eyes.
No. Now you think only of yourself. The advantage to your family, to William, holds no weight with you. I am very disappointed in you. You show yourself very, very different from what I had imagined. Now you are by no means free of that self-regard which in a young woman is disagreeable beyond all else. Now must I remind you that the luxury to pick and choose is beyond your means? You may live another 18 years in the world before being addressed by a man of half Mr. Crawford's estate and character. I do not claim that you owe me the duty of a daughter, but if your own heart can acquit you of ingratitude...
I'm very sorry to make you angry, sir. But I know I could never make him happy. And I'd be miserable myself.
Now, child. Dry up your tears. As you know, Mr. Crawford is soon to leave Mansfield. He has but a short time to convince you that you might not be so very miserable after all.
Sir Thomas leaves and Fanny sits crying at the end of her bed. Henry reads from a book.
The moon shines bright. In such a night as this, when the sweet wind did gently kiss the trees, and they did make no noise. In such a night, Troilus, methinks, mounted the Trojan walls, and sighed his soul towards the Grecian tents, where Cressid lay that night.
Oh, so very well read, really. It was like being at a play, was it not, Sir Thomas?
Indeed, the play must be a favourite of yours.
After tonight, sir, it will be. But to tell the truth, I like an audience.
He looks at Fanny.
Did you speak?
No. I don't think you've told Miss Price anything she does not know, Henry.
Miss Crawford, will you join us for cards? Yes, you deal.
I've often resolved to make good my neglect of Shakespeare. But it would take regular study, and I am not constant in my habits. What did that shake of the head mean?
Nothing.
You shook your head when I said I am not constant.
Perhaps, sir, I thought it a pity you don't always know yourself as well as you did in that moment.
You have spoken.
Hardly to please you.
But it does please me. If I don't understand your opinion of me, then how can I improve on it? And you know I'm going back to London, and you expect by the end of the week I shall have forgotten you. Believe me, you're quite wrong. You are cold.
Henry takes a shawl from the back of Fanny's chair and drapes it over her shoulders. He leans down close to her ear.
Fanny.
You up? My game.
Oh, very well read.
Lady Bertram, who's been fast asleep on the sofa, wakes with a start and Henry recoils. Mary leaves the card game.
My dear Miss Price. Now the moment has come. I hate to leave Mansfield.
Fanny's surprised as Mary hugs her.
Good, gentle Fanny. I don't know how it is, but you will have so much more heart than one usually finds in the world at large. And I confess, I would like to have seen Edmund once more, ordained or no. There were things I said to Edmund that I wish unsaid with all my heart. Would you tell him so, Fanny, from me?
Me? No, you must not leave me with such an errand, Miss Crawford.
Well, at least you'll give him my compliments, I hope. Is there not a word missing in our language, Miss Price? Something between compliments and love.
Daytime, Fanny races along a corridor.
Very much complimented us. Thank you. Badly told me you had something very important to discuss.
I have an unusual request to make to you.
Fanny and Edmund make eye contact briefly before Edmund disappears into a room with Sir Thomas. Later, Henry walks towards Fanny in the elegant gardens.
The Reverend Bertram! How well it sounds. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She bows and hugs him.
Stayed away so long, I thought you were never coming back. Did Sir Thomas send for you?
No. The reason I stayed away so long was to avoid Mary. Only to run into the Crawfords just as they were quitting the village. You know, if I hadn't, I might never have seen Mary again. I quite decided to forget her, to end the whole torturous business. But seeing her just now, her manner to me was so very sweet, her own words so simple, her looks. cannot give her up. She's the only woman in the world whom I can ever think of as my wife. She's invited me to visit her in London.
No, no.
And I must waste no time in doing so quickly before the habits of wealth and fashion scupper my chances. So now I am to go away again. I'm sorry, Fanny. I promise I'll write as soon as I have any news. And anyway, I gather it's you I have to thank for their delayed departure.
Fanny looks away distracted.
Fanny?
What can I say? I'm sure we'll think very differently.
That's true, I think. Crawford's proposal a highly desirable one. If you can return his affection, but Fanny, if you can't, of course you mustn't accept him.
I was afraid you'd blame me.
Blame you? Your conduct has been faultless. But I can see you might wish to love him, the natural wish of gratitude, if nothing else. And you know, my father thought he detected some little flaw in your feelings.
No, he was mistaken. I promise you, he was mistaken.
Oh, well.
Nothing Edmund could say had any influence over her. She will not have him.
I'm not surprised. There's something about Fanny I've often observed. She does not like to be dictated to.
Fanny is very young. A period of reflection may be all that's required to bring Fanny to a more sober appreciation of Mr. Crawford's offer. I propose we leave Fanny behind when we visit your mother.
Oh.
It will involve a small sacrifice on your part, my dear.
For 3 weeks.
But I presume on your goodness to allow it.
Of course, if Fanny were to marry Mr. Crawford, I should not dream of missing her. Never mind the loss to me.
And I tell you what, if she does, and this is more than I did for Mariah, next time Pug has a litter, I shall give her one of the puppies.
Mrs. Norris lowers her gaze. Fanny watches from a downstairs window of Mansfield House as Lady Bertram, Mrs. Norris and Sir Thomas climb into a carriage. Sir Thomas throws her a parting glance. Fanny sighs as Sir Thomas taps on a window and the carriage drives off. A footman jumps on at the last minute. Fanny, sadness etched across her broad face as she watches the carriage pass through the front gates and off down the drive. It's night. Fanny sits alone at the dining room table. She wearily toys with food on her plate. Daytime, she walks through the gardens. Placing a hand on the ridged trunk of a great oak tree, she stares out over the sun-filled lawn, lost in thought. She leans back on the trunk, her brow furrowed. Later, she writes on a piece of paper in front of a glowing fire.
My dear cousin.
She scores out the writing and starts on a fresh piece of paper.
Dearest Edmund, perhaps it is because of my present solitude, but I cannot stop thinking of our last meeting. And I so wish... I wish...
She holds the gold chain Edmund gave to her in her hand.
I did not mean to say you should not hope. Life without hope is intolerable, and even I, in my secret heart, dare hope that...
Fanny lets the feather quill fall on the paper. Daytime, Henry looks dapper in top hat and black suit. He walks through the front gates of Mansfield Park. He walks up to Fanny, who's sitting in the shade on a curved stone bench with her eyes closed. She opens them. Her tired eyes widen and she sits up as Henry bows to her. He takes her hand and kisses it.
Forgive me for calling like this unannounced. I had such a desire to see you. And here you are.
She looks fixedly at him as he sits down beside her.
You are tired, Mr. Crawford.
Oh, I have been too much in society.
And I too little.
Well, then we are equally in character, Miss Price.
Shall we walk?
They get up and walk.
Have you news from London, Mr. Crawford?
Nothing of any interest. No war, no fire, no revolution. But Mariah and Julia are tireless followers of fashion. And even Edmund has dined several times at Mariah's, where, as you may know, my sister is living at present. Mary's appetite for society remains undimmed.
And Tom?
Oh, we see no more of Tom than you do. The last I heard, he was at Newmarket, continuing his giddy career of drinking and gambling. Whereas I... Mansfield has spoiled me for anywhere else.
They stop in the garden and stand face to face.
Or perhaps, living with this all the time, you no longer see its beauty. But to me, on a day like this, it is an uncommonly lovely sight.
Oh, I think so too. I can imagine nowhere lovelier than Mansfield Park.
You see, I haven't forgotten about you, Fanny. Not for a moment. I've been thinking of you constantly. Have I not proved myself?
I just don't know how to answer you.
Now you know how to answer me. Just give me some sign, Fanny, no matter how small. Tell me I may look forward to being happy. Help me, Fanny. Guide me.
I can't guide you. We all have our best guides within us. If only we would listen.
Henry tentatively leans his face closer to hers. He goes to kiss her, but when their lips are about to meet, she turns her head away. He steps back.
Well, leave me to my own judgment then, but my better self, as you well know, is in your keeping.
He bows to her respectfully and walks away. Fanny looks after him, then turns away, a confused expression on her face. Nighttime. Two carriages arrive at Mansfield Park. Two footmen unload a pallet from one of the carriages, on which lies the blanketed figure of a man. Mrs. Bertram is there.
Please be gentle with him. Carefully now. Oh, Tom. Tom, my dearest boy.
Go inside and then straight up to the room.
Gently.
Yep. Fanny runs downstairs and meets Edmund entering through French doors. He hugs her.
Thank God we have you, Fanny. Go to my mother. She needs you. Tom is extremely ill.
Mrs. Norris enters, followed by Lady Bertram, who hugs Fanny.
Oh, Fanny. Dear Fanny. Now I shall be comforted.
Later in the drawing room.
He had been drinking a good deal, Fanny. And after he fell, he neglected himself until he brought on such a fever that he hardly knew who or where he was. Finally, his physician insisted on calling us to him. And now, they have fear for his lungs. I'm so very, very frightened, Fanny.
I'm sure I didn't go near him. With my weak chest, it could prove fatal.
I'm sure we have more reason to hope than to fear.
Dear Fanny, pray God you were right. But now,
I am guided by Sir Thomas in everything. But can it be right for him to go away again at such a time?
Sir Thomas is leaving us. Now.
Lady Bertram nods. Fanny walks to Sir Thomas's study. Through the half-open door, she sees him seated, his head resting on a hand. She hesitates. He looks up as Fanny pushes the door open slightly.
Fanny.
Yes, Uncle.
Come in a moment.
Now standing by the fire, Sir Thomas holds a piece of paper.
Are you unwell, sir?
No, not unwell. But certain.
He throws the paper in the fire.
Business affairs take me to London. Edmund knows I am going, but not why, and I will not add to my wife's unhappiness unless it becomes absolutely necessary to do so. I rely on you, if only to take care of her.
With deeply furrowed brow, Sir Thomas steps forward towards Fanny.
I may be disappointed elsewhere, but in you, my dear, I'm blessed.
He takes her face in his hands and kisses her forehead.
As for Tom, we can only hope and pray.
Tom lies in bed in a feverish state. Fanny, Edmund, and a doctor stand at his bedside. A large black leech squirms in a glass container.
My first task is to bring the patient's temperature down.
The doctor places blood-sucking leeches on Tom's chest.
Once these little handmaidens have done their work, we may be more optimistic.
Tom breathes heavily, his face contorted with a pained expression. The doctor leaves. Fanny glances at Edmund, who stares worriedly at his brother. Fanny then sits on the bed. She places a damp cloth onto Tom's neck and face. It seems to help his breathing calm slightly. Later.
You saw Miss Crawford in London?
Yes, every day. But not once alone. She was in a pack all the time. She danced a great deal. She spoke a great deal. Said nothing sensible or even kind. She was, I suppose, her London self. Like a stranger with whom I had to argue every little point.
Fanny places a caring hand on Edmund's back, then stands and leaves. Edmund, wearing a deep, thoughtful expression, watches her go. Morning time, Fanny carries a tray holding a bowl of soup and a paper into Tom's bedroom. A tired-looking Edmund is in an armchair at his bedside. He eyes Fanny as she lays the tray down.
Can I do anything?
Edmund rubs his weary eyes. Pale-faced Tom glances at him.
Let Fanny read to me.
You're bored with me, are you?
Well, I could do the pretty face to look at.
Our patient is improving.
Let me guess. The racing news?
Every word. And no objections, please.
I warn you, Fanny. Illness has brought out Tom's true nature in all its wonderful ugliness. He is a tyrant.
Well, I shan't let him tyrannize me.
We'll see about that. You'll give way. You're too kind to quarrel.
You should not rely on it, cousin.
Fanny, her curly blonde locks scraped back off her face, smiles at Edmund.
Fanny is the best girl alive.
On his way out, Edmund looks back at Fanny as she begins to read.
It's 4-1 on Little Scott, and Remnant beat Swallow by 2 lengths in the second meeting at Newmarket on Monday. 3-1 on Robinson.
Sir Thomas rides through the front gates of Mansfield Park. Later, Fanny joins him in his study.
Ah, my dear. Yes. Where's Edmund?
In the breakfast room, sir.
With your aunt?
Yes.
I shall be with you in a moment.
Fanny finds Mary dressed all in black with a servant in the hallway.
These are sad circumstances in which to meet again, Miss Price.
She hugs Fanny.
It surprises me that Tom's sisters are happy to stay in London, but you are here. And I will do anything I can to help and comfort. Poor young man. If he were to be cut off now in the flower of his days, it would be most tragic.
None of us are troubling to be quite so pessimistic, Miss Crawford.
I am justly reprimanded, but pray don't misunderstand me. By my honour, I never bribed a physician in my life. However, should Tom die, then wealth and consequence could fall into no hands more deserving of them. Is Edmund home?
Edmund walks up to the two women.
Am I come too late?
I need to talk to you all, Miss Crawford. This concerns you too. My dear, I have to ask you to be brave. I'm very sorry for it.
Julia.
Julia is safe with our cousins at Richmond. Last week, I received a letter from an old friend in London. It contained a good deal to concern me about our daughter, Mariah. I had no choice but to act immediately. I went to town in the faint hope that my informant might be mistaken, or failing that I might at least reverse a desperate situation. I need hardly say that I have been disappointed. Mariah has left her home and her husband.
No.
Lady Bertram stands.
No, this cannot be.
Flagrantly, publicly, and utter contempt for our family's honour. With complete disregard for each and every one of us. She has run away with Mr. Crawford.
Edmund eyes Mary standing across the table from him. Sir Thomas plonks down on a chair.
I'm become aware of my errors too late. I had hoped my daughters would grow up to be good. But I succeeded only in them being good-mannered. I knew my daughter no more than a stranger. Woman whose shoulder I might brush against without any inkling of her fears, her hopes, her passions. And now it's too late. Her character is destroyed.
Later.
Did you notice nothing at the time? Were they so very discreet?
Discreet? If only they had been, 1 ounce of common discretion would have saved us.
Saved us?
Well, you don't think Henry set out to destroy the Rushworths' marriage? I don't mean to defend Henry at your sister's expense, but really, I could knock their silly heads together. I never imagined that they would really do it. And I'm sure we both thought Mariah knew she'd had her penny's worth, to use the vulgar phrase, and would be content. Now, for one moment's stupidity, Mariah has thrown away everything she gained by her marriage.
Is that all you have to say?
Please, don't think that I've forgotten Fanny. That foolish girl. If Fanny had accepted him, they might now even be married. And Henry's relationship with Mrs. Rushworth would be no more than a harmless little flirtation.
Enough! You've said enough.
Forgive me, but I have not yet made my point. Edmund, I beg you, advise your father not to interfere.
You mean my father should collude in this business in the hope that Henry will marry Mariah?
Well, think, Edmund, think. Mariah would recover some footing in society. Not all, of course, but should the worst happen with your brother, then we. I mean, you and I, Edmund, would be in a position to help Mariah and accept her back here at Mansfield.
I cannot believe what I'm hearing. Have you no sense of what this means? All you see is folly. A little embarrassment we can overcome if only we're sensible and we think straight for 5 minutes. Society will forgive us. What do I care about society? My father's shame will last forever. And my mother's grief, and I... The woman I thought I loved doesn't exist. She was a figment of my imagination. So much the better, you may say. I have less to lose. But I'd have lost you 1,000 times rather than see you for what you really are.
Mary turns and walks away a little. She turns back.
A pretty lecture, I must say. Will it be one of your sermons? Love is supposed to endure disappointment, is it not? Or so I am told.
Goodbye, Miss Crawford. I wish you well with all my heart.
Wide-eyed, Edmund bows politely and walks out. Mary, with crumpled brow, watches him go.
Edmund!
He looks back at her from the doorway, but carries on. Fanny is reading to Lady Bertram, who's lying in bed.
Sweet stream that winds through yonder glade, apt emblem of a virtuous maid. Silent and chaste, she steals along, far from the world's gay busy throng, with gentle yet prevailing
form. Fanny, on hearing a noise outside the room, checks that Lady Bertram is asleep before walking out. She finds Edmund pacing nervously in the candlelit drawing room. Their eyes meet before Edmund lowers his gaze.
Edmund.
She steps forward and hugs him warmly.
How I was deceived. I deceived myself.
They share an intense look before Edmund steps away a little. Daytime. A bright, cheerful Fanny comes upon Mrs. Norris in the hallway.
This is all you're doing. You think of nothing unknown but yourself. If you'd have accepted Mr. Crawford, none of this would have happened.
Later.
Loria's letter shows her to be deeply unhappy, Sir Thomas. So unhappy, I cannot but hope if you were to go to her, she might be persuaded to leave Mr. Crawford and return home.
Mr. Rushworth would not have her, ma'am.
I mean to say she might return here.
Well, that I fear is impossible. As a daughter, Maria may count on me always to secure her comfort and protection. Further than that, I cannot go. Even her mother doesn't expect it.
You mean Maria is to be sacrificed for the sake of Fanny's niceness?
I mean nothing of the sort. If you feel it is your duty, Mrs. Norris, to be Maria's companion in her grievous situation, then you may feel free to go.
Shocked, Mrs. Norris's face falls. Later, she walks out of Mansfield Park and climbs on board a carriage. Fanny tentatively walks to the doorway and watches her leave. Edmund stands by her side.
Poor Maria.
I don't know who I feel more sorry for, Maria or Aunt Norris.
That's better. A frown doesn't suit you.
They share a warm smile before Fanny leaves. Later in the drawing room, Fanny is helping Lady Bertram with a piece of needlework. Tom and Edmund are there.
Which should I use here, Fanny? The purple wool or the maroon?
The purple, Aunt.
Edmund stares at Fanny sitting beside his mother. His face softens slightly, and he seems to see her in a different light. She sits with head lowered, reading a book. Her soft blonde hair hanging loosely around her face. She wears a pretty pale blue dress.
Damn it if Fenimore didn't come in last again at Newmarket.
Tom shakes his head. Nighttime. In her bedroom, Fanny, wearing a nightdress, washes her hair in a china bowl in front of a roaring fire.
It's only me.
Edmund, come in.
He enters and averts his eyes.
Sorry, really, come in.
He closes the door and enters the room. He stares blankly at the floor for a moment and seems lost for words.
I only wanted to say...
Fanny dries her hair with a towel.
What was it I wanted to say?
It wasn't about us going riding tomorrow, was it?
Yes, that was it. I just wanted to be sure you hadn't forgotten.
I hadn't.
Well, good. glad.
He stares at her, wide-eyed.
But now, Edmund, I really must go to bed.
Yes, of course. Sorry. Well, then. Good night, Fanny.
Good night, Edmund.
You know, I've always loved this room.
Fanny stifles a smile by biting her lips. Edmund nods and holds a long, hesitating stare before leaving. Once gone, Fanny covers her mouth with the towel and giggles. Next morning, Fanny chases the little pug dog downstairs.
Fanny, I really do need to talk to you.
Edmund bursts out of his room and watches her run downstairs. He does up his cravat and runs. He runs into the hallway outside the dining room and comes to a halt. Fanny smiles at him mischievously. Lady Bertram, Sir Thomas, Fanny and Edmund sit around the breakfast table together. Fanny takes a sip of tea from a china cup and eyes Edmund playfully from across the table. Sir Thomas reads a newspaper. Lady Bertram notices the playful mood between her son and Fanny. Edmund and Fanny share smiles and seem impatient to be alone together.
Fanny, my dear, I've quite run out of lavender. Pick some, won't you, before the sun gets too hot?
Yes, Aunt, of course.
And Edmund, find the scissors and go with her.
Yes, of course.
Edmund, if you remember, I need you to come into town with me this morning.
I have several affairs. Not this morning, Sir Thomas. I'm sure your business can wait.
Sir Thomas looks baffled as Edmund runs out. He runs down the hallway and outside into the garden. He leaps down some stone steps and onto the lawn.
Edmund!
Fanny.
They stand face to face.
Your father.
It was nothing.
Lavender.
He grabs her arm as she makes to go. He holds her head in his hands and kisses her on the lips.
I love you. I was blind. Forgive me.
They kiss some more. Arm in arm, the couple walk up the stone steps towards the house. Lady Bertram looks out through the dining room window.
Look, Sir Thomas.
Sir Thomas rises from his chair and walks towards the window. He stands beside his smiling wife.
Now perhaps Edmund will at last think to ask Fanny to marry him.
Ask Fanny to marry him? Surely...
Oh, my dear. Fanny has been in love with Edmund since she was a little girl.
Sir Thomas's face softens as the penny drops.
How is it the poet describes a wife, Sir Thomas?
She's heaven's last best gift, my dear.
They kiss each other's cheeks. A glorious sunny day in the gardens of Mansfield Park. Guests are gathered for a celebration. Family and friends throw petals over newlyweds Fanny and Edmund as they walk over the lawn. Edmund looks at his stunning bride, who wears an off-white wedding dress. She tosses her bouquet. Edmund spins her around and they stand face to face. Sir Thomas throws a worried glance around the guests. Fanny and Edmund begin to dance a waltz. The guests look on surprised.
Edmund and Fanny have learned a new dance.
Tom, looking much healthier, laughs at the newlyweds.
Is it possible to be so happy?
Yes. Let's make it our business, Mrs. Bertram, to be happy ever after.
They continue dancing in the sunlight and Edmund steals another kiss from his glowing bride. ITFC audio description.